Now, before we start this very special celebratory 12th episode of the Alt Animation Podcast, I have a couple announcements. At the end of the episode, you're going to get to hear a really cool new segment that we have called Cell Therapy with Kevin Cooper. Kevin did a podcast on animation that was really good, and he's going to be doing a segment for us now on the Alt Animation Podcast. This podcast he's reviewing Batman the Brave and the Bold. He has a really thought-provoking review on it, and you know, really made me want to go watch it again. So the other announcement is that one of our a friend of the show and one of the interviewees that we had in the past, Michael Kaywood, he finished up Devil's Angels and Dating, and they're looking for financial backing. He has an Indiegogo funding page. So make sure and check that out. Go to devilsangelsanddating.com, and there's a really cool offer for an ebook, a PDF of, you know, the art and how the short was made. And it's really interesting because, you know, he had to build this extremely elaborate social network to bring everyone together over the internet. So definitely go and check that out. And if you feel like you want to donate and get your name on the credits, definitely do that. Also, again, you get that ebook. So now, without further ado, here's our very special 12th episode of the Alt Animation Podcast. Welcome to the Alt Animation Podcast, the podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. I'm Josh Ryan.
I'm Robert Dorndoff.
I'm Wendell Johnson.
We have a special guest today, Wendell. How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Wendell, what would you classify yourself as? You're a 3D generalist, or?
I am now. In the past, I used to specialize in modeling and lighting, but as of lately, I'm pretty much a generalist.
Where are you working these days?
I work at Touch Studios out of New Orleans, Louisiana.
Well, the reason why Wendell is here is we're celebrating a very special occasion, the 12th podcast of the Alt Animation Podcast. All right.
Woo! I feel like we should start this whole thing.
Why should we start over?
Well, we decided today that we're just going to wing it since it's the 12th episode.
Yeah.
You know, not bring anything.
Can I get a toot-toot on the old...
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
There we go.
So, anybody have any interesting animation news that you didn't plan to bring that just shot up out of the blue, out of nowhere? Ooh, I remember what I wanted to talk about, actually. This is why we should plan, but it's funner. It's funner to listen to this.
It's more funner. Oh, wait, I didn't do any grammar editing, so I didn't edit that.
I think we should start over. We should just start the whole thing over.
I think we should stay now. I like committing to things that are looking bad.
Well, have you guys heard of Chopkick Panda or Puss in Boots, not the new movie that DreamWorks is making, but the actual...
You mean that wonderful new thing that looks amazing, Puss in Boots?
Well, okay, there's... And this isn't the first time that this has happened. You know, obviously, like, whenever you go to Blockbuster, there's a B-movie version of whatever the new movie's coming out, right? There's just, like, a slight difference.
Oh, yeah, the Transmorphers.
Yeah.
What was it? Arma... What was the Armageddon one? That was a good
I don't
one
know.
They gotta be clever with those names. They gotta change at least two letters.
Yeah, or you gotta have just a slight variation on the title. Well, there's people that are doing that now. When Kung Fu Panda came out, it was Chopkick Panda. And it's not a bad story. It's all 2D, flash animated. You know, obviously they made it all on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But their whole strategy is to release these cartoons when the big budget ones come out and mm-hmm. basically just leech off of...
Yeah, they're literally right next to that movie. They always start with the same letter and probably like the same two letters so that they're not like spaced out from them. They're right there.
Yeah.
And you almost like... It's almost like some percentage of the time that people reach for a movie they want, they're going to like be talking to their friend and grab the one next to it and not know it and walk up to the front and check out with it. That's probably where most of their money comes from.
Well, yeah, because not a whole lot of people are well-versed, I guess, with animation. They're not able to like pick out, oh, that's not the same Puss in Boots or the same...
Really? I don't believe that.
I think it's geared
like
towards
a grandma.
Parents.
Yeah, exactly.
A kid wants to watch Kung Fu Panda. All mom hears is Panda. She goes to the store and pick up Chopkick Panda.
Yeah. And one of the ways they get away with it, too, is that, like, Chopkick Panda came out way before the Kung Fu Panda DVD came out, because it was coming out during theater, you know, so they're basically marketing, they're getting all their marketing from the Kung Fu Panda in theaters for their DVD, and there's no competition for it. So, you know, what do you guys think? Do you guys think that that's a legitimate business for him? I mean, it's just a guy making money.
You've got to define legitimate first. You know, I mean.
Well, guys have done this for years, actually, because they do it with websites. Instead of going to Rogaine.com, you'll be at Robaine.com.
Yeah, that, just slight variation.
It's just a slight variation.
Did you go to Rogaine.com recently and get burned?
I'm good on mine.
No, you're totally right, though. There's a whole... Since the market is so saturated with people wanting content, there's so many people that you can kind of catch through the cracks, you know? Mm-hmm. There's so many people that fall through. I don't know. I mean, would you guys consider it a scam?
Well, no. I mean, okay, Blockbuster's business model for a long time has not been aim at the discerning viewer. It's been people who need something to numb their minds, or I don't know what their who their market is, but when you've got 200 copies of one movie in the whole store, it's like, here's what we're selling this week. Here's what you can rent this movie. Well, you know, I don't think, you know, the people who continue to go after that are the kind of people who care.
Well, Netflix kind of has the same problem, too, where, you know, 90% of the movies are low-budget, you know,
yeah, but some of those are, like, the Parking Lot movie or, you know, all of these movies that have, like, got their legs at Netflix.
Well, yeah, but there is a huge... I mean, I'm sure you've seen some, Wendell, on Netflix where it's, like... You know, obviously a very low-budget movie that they're pushing up to the front, like newly released or featured, you know, videos.
I just realized there's another market for these movies. The people who go into Blockbuster and get these movies instead of the other movies to watch them and to basically watch them ironically.
Yeah.
Hipsters.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Hipsters.
Hipsters.
Well, I mean, that's what I did. That's why I watched Chopkick Panda, because I wanted to see why... You know, they felt the need to do this.
And editor's note, Josh Ryan is a hipster.
No, but the cartoon was actually, it was pretty good. I mean, it had some solid plot lines that were different than Kung Fu Panda that were actually pretty interesting, you know? Like,
now, did this come out around the time as the first one or the second Kung Fu Panda?
I think it was the second one. But the reason what brought it up is I just saw that they're the same guys are doing one for Puss in Boots. Mm-hmm. And the cover is... rendered out really well. You know, it's all 2D, but the cover looks, you know, like painted, so it almost looks 3D, but it's not the same style. But people that, you know, don't really pay attention to that kind of thing, they can easily get
50% of the budget for the movie was just the cover of the DVD case. The rest of the rendering power was split over all of the frames of the movie, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, and there's a quote I think by the guy who made it who said something about like, well, no, we made this to, you know, trick people, and that's the whole point of this, obviously, but, you know, we wanted to have fun with it, and we wanted to make something that was good, so, you know, we put our efforts into it, but we're not going to make anything that can't be made for over $1.68, I think was his quote.
Like, yeah.
You know, it has to cost a little bit of money.
But if you think about, let's think about cereal. There's Frosted Flakes, and then there's Crosted Flakes.
Yeah.
It's not Frosted Flakes. Well, you're just saying there's something, but there's not literally Frosted Flakes, is there?
Well, there's Frosted Flakes where there's Tony the Tiger on the cover. Then there's one where it's a polar bear on the cover.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something called Frosted Flakes, because I want to check that out if there is. I like it ironically.
Growing up in El Paso, I would go to the flea market and buy Adidas brand clothes instead of Adidas.
Oh,
there was
man.
Two A's at the end. It was worked just as well. I mean, I guess... It is a little shady to try to, you know, use other people's publicity. But honestly, I mean, it's kind of a smart idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it honest? That's a subjective thing. You know, does it have a place in a, like, what, purely capitalistic society? Yes, like, it does, you know, because, I don't know, you know, because fools and money soon part anyway. And if the person can't tell the difference, then they had the same experience, you know?
Well, you bring up a very good point. I mean, there's a totally different demographic of people that are going to go watch a movie, you know, watch Kung Fu Panda in 3D and spend $13 each. And then there's a different demographic of people that are going to buy Chopkick Panda at the bargain bin at Walmart for $3. So, you know, maybe it is a way for them to still kind of feel...
Every time I see those movies, though, I just get a little sad because I know, like, as I'm reading the title, there's a kid somewhere who's like, but Mom, this isn't it. I wanted this other one. She's like, it says Panda, like you were saying. Like,
yeah, on Christmas morning, he opens it up and gets super distraught.
But,
Mom!
Yeah, I mean, I've got it easy. I'm kind of spoiled. In Austin, there's not one, but two kind of mom-and-pop video stores, like, long time ago, like, in the 80s, early 90s.
Which ones are you talking about?
I Love Video and Vulcan Video.
Okay.
You know, where...
I'm not allowed at either of those anymore, actually.
Oh, you stole the movies.
No, no, because I have late fees that have just piled up.
At I Love Video, you can get a, you can get half off if you go the 1st or the 15th.
I know. I just never have done it. But it's cool
it's
because...
It's not like it's compounding interest. It's not like it's getting more while you're...
Well, here's my DVD. Here's my plan, though, is I had late fees at two other chains, and they since went out of business, and I didn't have to pay any of the late fees. So I'm just, like, waiting for them to go out of business.
I hate you.
I did that with Blockbuster, but I lost a bet. Oh. Blockbuster is still open, but I'm not allowed that.
Well, all right. For those of us who, you know, pay their fees on time, there's two groups. You know, I not that I want to see Transformers or Transmorphers, but I'm the kind of person who gets deep into the stuff. You know, I care and I want to. I want the most quality for my dollar, not the most sort of quantity at the cheapest dollar. You know, I go one direction. Other people go the other direction. I think for the people who do get those movies, depending on the various reasons that they get them, I do think that they probably are satisfied. Otherwise, these guys couldn't keep doing this. They've been doing it for... I've seen this stuff for at least 10 years. Probably like 15... maybe more, I doubt it, but like probably like 15, 10 years, these guys have been in business. It's from what I've seen, because I've looked at this before too, they're the same guys. They've been at this for so long that people keep doing this. And if people were really pissed off and felt like burned, they would check the next time. You know, can you imagine a person just like, oh, I did it again. You know, I went and bought the wrong, you know, like,
yeah.
But not no, I again. Think,
I th- yeah, I mean,
Shopkick Panda.
And you know, you're talking about like, oh, are they essentially stealing money out of the pockets of DreamWorks, and are they stealing money out of the pockets of whichever studio did Transformers? But you know, I mean, not to sound sort of like down with the man, but I mean,
a bad example, because obviously Michael Bay is ripping that idea off from the original Transformers cartoon.
Yeah.
So,
well, but he did it with the rights. You know?
Yeah, exactly. All he had was the money up front, though.
But
it's
Michael Bay, and I'm quite happy to see him, you know, not get an extra $20.
Bootlegging keeps the economy going. So,
okay. I mean, this is more of an economics discussion than
it happens everywhere. They bootleg purses. They bootleg CDs. I actually found the name. Frosted Flakes is the actual cereal. Frosty Flakes.
There we go.
And like there's Fruit
Loops,
and then there's Fruit Rings. Actually,
that's probably their slogan.
Yeah.
You can't taste the difference.
I got mad when I had Frosty Flakes.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, no, I actually do draw a line between, Coach bags that are sold on the street in New York versus the videos that are in the rental store at Blockbuster. I'd say like the rip-off bags and the rip-off glasses and the rip-off watches are actually a shade or two or three or more worse than, you know, what we're talking about. Because again, you know, yes, you know, it's a couple letters different in the name, but the person has, you know, they're right next to each other. If you've picked up the one, it means you don't really care, you know.
Yeah, you're not a discerning.
Yeah, it's not about that for you. There's something else you're getting from it.
I don't know if you heard that one podcast we were talking about how in China now, to combat bootlegging, they're releasing videos that you can stream on the internet now. And they're partnered with the Chinese government and certain Chinese media streaming sites. They have to combat, you know, the bootleg, you know, people selling it on the street for $3. So they have movies, Kung Fu Panda being one of them, actually, that you can stream for $1.68 to watch the movie. And that's the only way that they can actually... you know, compete with the really low prices of bootlegging. So that's the only way
$1.68 per stream?
Like, or for the movie, basically.
Stream, like, to download the movie and own it as a digital version?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'll have to go back to the article and look it up. But, yeah.
We're doing the podcast
that works.
Now.
Yeah.
But
I think that works because the majority of people, except for when it comes to, like, Kung Fu Panda, which is something that some kids will watch over and over, like we watched the Disney movies that we grew up with over and over.
Yeah.
Those kids are going to watch stuff over and over. But the majority of people, when they watch movies, they watch it once or twice and then they're done with it.
Yeah.
So would you rather pay $3 for a bootleg on the street, or would you rather pay $1.69 and watch it legally?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure, you know, in the Middle Ages, when they invented the printing press, and, you know, the price of books fell, and the writer is now getting X amount per copy or whatever.
And all the monks lost their jobs.
Yes, yeah. I'm pretty sure there was somebody saying that the printing press was an injustice, when really all it is it's an industry changing in the face of changing technology.
Yeah.
I have to agree. I mean, I realize that, you know, like, if you're not getting 20, 30 bucks per copy of everything, you're not making as much. But, you know, haven't movie budgets been kind of overblown for a while?
Well,
you know, like, do they, you know, just, in other words, the fear is that at $1.68 per rental, per copy, what have you, can the industry sustain itself?
Well, there's an ebb and flow, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, back when Disney was making movies originally, they were making very high-quality, awesome movies, right? Mm-hmm. You pay a premium price for them.
Yes.
And, you know, they cost a lot to make, so you pay more for it. Well, then you get to the point where they're making sequels, so really they're ripping off their own brand. You know, they're doing Chop Kick Panda versions of their own movies by making Cinderella 2 and
yeah.
whatnot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, especially when a sequel horribly pales to the original.
Yeah, and the budget is it? You know,
I think
half
there's
the budget.
Been enough Land Before Times now that if you watch them one to the other, it's actually 65 million years. So, I don't know. Bad joke, sorry. Okay, moving on. Yeah. No, that should have been wah, wah.
Oh, yeah.
Can you do that one? Awesome. Okay. But, yeah.
But, so where I was going with that, though, is the ebb and flow. You have, you know, them making sequels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but everyone's like, oh, no, the budgets are too big. Hey, we can kind of market, you know, this as the same movie, kind of make cheaper versions of it and mm-hmm. get more money or you know, sell them
franchise.
For cheaper. Exactly. Well, then that's when Pixar was kind of born out of that disdain for lack of quality and lack of
what happens,
you know,
there
budget
is,
there.
And this is happening right, this is a trend that's, I mean, it's big and it's bad in the film industry right now. Luckily, like, it doesn't seem to be happening in television as bad, but overall, entertainment everywhere. If it's something that has existed before and something that has a name that you've already heard, they're way more willing to bank on it. And internally, like you're talking about, they can do that with. So what it means is no new fresh ideas come. Eventually it's just rehash, rehash, rehash. It's like, well, that's completely new. Why are we doing that? You know? So.
Well, like I said, man, there's an ebb and flow. I mean, there's, you know, there's cycles where people get used to that. You know, they're afraid of the change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they want to market a franchise, and
yeah,
then
if they want a solid investment, they want, you know,
exactly. And then once that burns out and people realize, you know,
does
that's,
it?
Well, because I said, that's when Pixar was born. That's
sometimes
when that became
I feel
successful.
Like I see them do things, and I'm like, man, you really don't think I'm that intelligent, do you? And then I see that, like, and then like while I'm looking at that thing that I sort of feel insulted by the existence of, a dude walks up and grabs it. And goes to the counter with it, and I'm like, you win, you got us. I mean, I guess there are enough of us who really are, you know, who are willing to get Transmorphers. And if, you know, if somebody else is willing to do it, why not Disney do it off of their own stuff?
Well, okay, if you think about it, like me, I had no problem buying the Adidas shoes mm-hmm. because it's the same thing in my mind. Like, I have no discerning taste.
Did you ever have to go to school in those shoes?
I mean, man.
I'm sure somebody checked. And called you out.
No, nobody. Nobody ever called me out. And that's not even the point. The point is that I don't care about shoes. I'm not a shoe person. I'm not a shoe connoisseur. So to me, all the shoes are the same.
Mm-hmm.
To somebody who's going to buy a DVD or some kind of cartoon, to them, really, they don't have any discerning taste mm-hmm. for animation. So it's the same thing in their minds. You know, like, oh, my kids are enjoying it. Or there's a laugh or two. Or somebody gets, you know, knocked in the nuts. Oh,
well,
it's
also
funny.
I'd be willing to live in a world where, Wendell, jump in anytime. I'd be willing to live in a world where,
jump in while he's talking.
Yeah, jump in while I'm talking. I'd feel
he does that all the time.
I probably do. But every movie at you know, Best Buy or wherever you go, where there's a stack of movies, $20, $20, or $19.99. Okay, let's go to the Blu-ray section. $29.99, $29.99, $29.99, and like you're saying, there's
the bargain bin.
There's a difference in quality between the Sleeping Beauty and Sleeping Beauty 13, she sleeps again or whatever. You know, I don't know. Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
she's probably dead.
Why does every DVD have to be the same price? If it weren't, you could have that. There would be this sort of elbow room for people who care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and those are the people that are probably going to go see the movie at the midnight
release. Let us who do care support the things that we care about, and then let's have the ideas.
Wait, I thought there is a price difference between the actual fake copies of the movies to compare to the original, because what would be the point of buying the fake copy if there was no price difference?
Ah, well, I mean, think about it, though. Again, the mom's thing. You were talking about, like, we're hypothetically...
Are you talking about bootlegs of the same movie, like someone just bootlegged the movie, or are you talking about someone that made a variation of the movie that's slightly different?
I'm talking about making a variation. Rip-offs.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, if you go to the store and there's a rip-off of Snow White and it's black-white... Yes, I am black. I make these jokes. But,
he's not black, like everybody. Alright.
But you go there and, you know, they're both $19.99. Why not buy the original copy instead of the remake or the parody of it?
Well, and that's
unless clearly, you're buying clearly, just parodies for the sake of watching parody.
Right, that's the irony crowd.
That's a very low, low that's demographic. The crowd.
Yeah.
And, well, that's a very good point you make, man, because I think that's where it gets shady is when you're offering it as it's that product, you know, if you're not kind of being honest with it.
Wow, in that case, like, I almost have to flip my opinion, which is the Coach handbags on the street in New York, you know what you're buying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, versus, like, but you're right, like, you go to a video store, you've got Transformers for $20 or whatever, $5 to rent or whatever, and or Transmorphers like, sitting right next to it for the same price.
Or if it's like Transformers with a Z at the end, you know, and like really, it looks exactly like the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
we reach no conclusions.
Yeah. Anybody else? Well, hey, let's talk about software for a little bit.
All right.
So, all right, Wendell, you're kind of, you definitely keep a close eye on all the new stuff and all the new technologies. You're more of a computer guy, obviously, a, you know, 3D specialist in lots of areas. What kind of software have you been using lately?
I've been using Modo a lot. I really love Modo, Luxology's Modo. Current version is 501.
Do you use it for just modeling or lighting as well?
I like using it for modeling and lighting. Yeah. But more times than not, because it doesn't have a robust animation package, I do most of my modeling in Modo, then OBJ it out to Maya or 3D Studio Max.
All right, why would you use Modo instead of like Max or Maya?
It's a faster workflow.
Why is that? It really is.
Okay, in Maya, when you're modeling and you want to make subcomponent changes, you have to go into subcomponent mode. And that's that's two clicks to get into that. In Modo, it's a hotkey, then you're moving.
Okay.
You want to copy and paste actual geometry or polygons, it's Control-C, Control-V. The copy and paste that works everywhere. It's just a faster workflow for me.
So are there any downsides to using it? I mean, why doesn't everyone use it already?
I think it's all about preference and actually what do you have? Because, you know, Modo is still relatively cheap on the price range compared to Maya or Max. Modo runs right now, I think it's $900 to $1,000 for the whole package. And
that sounds about right.
Yeah. I'll bet there are a lot of studios that... you know, when you go and you sit down at your desk, you've got the company provides you Maya, and then there are artists who are like, yeah, but I want Modo. And then they just go get it themselves.
No.
Either, no?
Because then you have all kinds of licensing issues for that. Like,
I don't mean on their computer. I mean, I've seen people who build in one, and then just on their own computer, and then bring the work over to the company computer, and... Like you say,
it's funny you said that because the person who introduced me into Modo, that's exactly what happened. He was working on Jimmy Neutron and he had a bunch of sets he needed to get out rather fast. And he went to his boss and was like, hey, you know, you're giving me kind of a ridiculous time frame. This is what I need to get this done. So they got him Moto, and he was able to get the job done.
So he asked for it, and the company actually, like, put in a PO for it and bought it under the license?
Yeah, they bought it within, like, the next couple of hours and sent him the downloaded copy. Well, the tech guy, you know, from the IT department came over, installed it on his work machine, and he was good to go.
You know, you
but
know
since I, then, the what's become the norm that I'm used to now is that individual artists like myself own a copy of Moto. So when we go to work, Moto doesn't care where your license is. You could just take your license with you to work and use it.
Really? So, all right, if you're working on a big Moto budget movie, they're not going to try to sue to get, you know, any of that out if they somehow figure out that you use Moto on the production?
Now, that's a question you would have to get an actual lawyer in here to debate. Yeah,
I haven't heard anything where they've done that, so for now I'd
but
say
mostly
no.
I've been doing 1099 work, so I am a contract worker by hire. So a lot of my work, I have to have my own software anywhere. Anyway, okay. It's just lately, you know, if I have a project, I want to cram it out in Moto, then switch it over to Maya because we're using Maya, then I'm able to do that.
That brings up something I think we can talk about is being kind of self-employed, have a 1099s, all that stuff. There's a lot of people lifestyle. That listen to it. Well, there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast that are students, and you know, you and me have definitely worked as freelance contractors, and one of the things they don't teach you in school, which I think should be the first and foremost class, is here's how to make this a viable, you know, working experience. Here's what you need to do for your taxes. Here's what you
like
need to...
home economics for the animator almost.
Well, yeah, because they
totally
don't tell
agree.
You these things.
Yeah. Nobody ever teaches you or even tells you when you're getting into this industry from my actual learning experience is what the job market is going to be like when you get out.
Wait, isn't it you get out and you're a badass and then you get like...
Yeah, you work at Pixar and...
You start maybe at like something as low as like $40,000 a year and then move up to like a really bad...
That's an ideal world.
That's... Yeah, there we go.
I'm losing it. Well, yeah, and that, unfortunately, that's what schools do, though.
Yeah.
To try and talk kids into signing up for
I
it.
Think
like, hey,
they see that they have to do that, and because they've got to make it look glamorous to get that.
Yeah.
That's how they. That's their position is like, well, we've got to play this up. You know, we've got to make it look like
when you're in school, they. I don't know if they hide that fact to you, but to me, it looks like a perfect Hollywood shuffle, because
well,
what happens
say
is
where you, went,
you get
I'm
those career classes, and all they do in these career classes is they help you put some of your work together.
Yeah, like
a
portfolio.
DVD. You get a portfolio, you learn how to set up resumes and how to send them off, but any idiot can teach you that.
Yeah.
But they actually give you a class to teach you this, and you're naive, you're 18, 20, you're thinking that, okay, this will work.
Yeah,
then you get out,
the class on.
And before you know it, you got to hunt. You got to roll through Craigslist ads. You have to call your mama's cousin, next door neighbor, postman's daughter for a job. You have to troll sites to find jobs.
You got
to
trip your friends. You got to like throw them down and beat them to the.
Well, okay, like
you got to browbeat them.
Somebody that graduates from CalArts or something. I mean, obviously they're going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's
and they're going to have the pick
situation.
Of the choice. And really, that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast is because you know there's a glamorous view of what animation is that a lot of people have, you know, and really 90% of it is these fringe jobs, people unemployed or people you know having to work their butts off on you know on their multiple freelance projects at any given time, and those are the real animators.
Yeah,
you know,
we're sitting here in the down and out part of Austin.
Here's the ideal world, because more and more corporations are doing contract work because nobody wants to hire on artists as full-time employees.
I mean that's a trend in a lot of places in
America
right now.
Well, it's the trend, but I want to say that the way to actually succeed as an artist now is to join a production house like Massive Black, a company that hires artists and huddles them together and treats them as it's a union, basically. It's a union of artists. You hire
a collective.
I don't know if it's a collective of artists. You hire the collective, and the collective takes on multiple jobs. That way it keeps all of his artists employed at the same time. And each person is working on multiple projects day in and day out. That way, as an artist, you don't get burnt out on one thing every single day.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a lot of studios used to do that. And now it's more, you know, they still do it in a way, but they look at it the wrong way in terms of, okay, I'm pulling all these people together, and then once a new cool guy comes in, we can pull them in the collective. They look at it the opposite way is, all right, here's our group of dudes for this project. Then once the project's over, cut them all, and then we'll build another collective, you know? And
usually it's the same people, but there they are sitting and waiting until the next project comes along. And sometimes it's funny, too, to talk to, like, those guys who are like, well, just got laid off from the last thing I did. It's about to ship. It's almost done. And, okay, so what's up next? Whenever they do another project, you know, it's, there's that element, too, of, like, you get comfortable and you're willing to sit and wait for the next, because you know that they'll call you, probably, you know, they've worked with you a couple times.
Yeah, or you hope they will.
You hope they will. I think the ones who, I think there are people who know that they're going to be the ones called the next time on by a game company or whoever, you know, you were working for on the last project. They're going to be like, okay, here's our short list of people who we definitely want, and then we'll fill it in from there. We'll call these guys back. And if you know you're one of them, I think there are plenty of people who are like, okay, I'm gonna wait. But in the meantime, while they're waiting, they have no idea how long the wait's gonna be. Sometimes, you know.
Well, and it's so one-sided because the companies want that, you know, loyalty and that that whole they still want their side. Wow. They want their side of the benefits package, right? Of having an employee and saying, hey, you know, we want you guys to work your butt off for us, and you know, really put in the hours, and we'll pay you back. But when people have been burned so many times, you know, it's hard to...
It's only a matter of time before you learn the lesson.
Yeah, and it's kind of...
The burnt hand teaches best.
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of sad. I'm sure you've felt the same thing, Wendell, where you go into a new place and you want to be excited about the project and you want to be excited about the job, but you've been burned so many times that...
You become jaded.
You start to look at every situation
the exact same as the last place.
Exactly. And you start thinking about other projects or other things you want to do, and you don't really focus on making that one a good project, you know, or even like... You know, it's a lot like a relationship, you know, where you get broken up with a bunch of times.
Actually,
you're
is
not
a relationship, sort of by a broader definition.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same thing as a dating relationship. Mm-hmm. Robert wouldn't know anything about
that. Look, why you gotta tell people?
Here, you wanna try the trumpet?
I have no idea how to play the trumpet. Right, I can't play my own wah wah. What do you actually call that thing? Just a wah wah.
The wah wah. Yeah.
The wah wah.
Wah wah.
Here's what I was thinking. We should have done.
Should we go back to software? Was that?
No, here's what I'm thinking we should have done. We should have done a clip show, because always in the holidays, especially since it's the 12th episode, everyone cheer.
No, woo! Yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. Arsenio Hall.
Well, since it's the 12th episode, and it's...
I didn't see you move your fingers on that.
I didn't. You changed the pitch by where you direct the air.
Ah.
Yeah.
So what are the fingers? What are the speed and flow there?
It's for... you can only shoot up on certain notes and octaves and things like that. But during the holidays, they always have clip shows. That's why I thought we should have done that. And
yeah,
remembered
whenever
all
I see
of our
a
best
clip
times.
Show, I just sort of imagine that there's an animator out of work that week.
Yeah. But, man, you know what my favorite clip show was?
Hmm.
The one Simpsons episode where they have the
Troy
singing.
McClure hosted?
No, it was the one where they have the musical clip show, and they have a song throughout the entire clip show in, you know, that's original for that episode, but it's talking about the old clip shows. It's such a good one, man.
Is the song at the end?
There's a song throughout
the
whole thing, pretty
much. The song apologizes via song that it's a clip show. I remember that one.
Oh, such a good one.
Okay, so that's Modo. All of what we just talked about is apparently Modo. I mean, you're working with After Effects now, too. You were just showing me some stuff that you had to do in After Effects. And you're doing...
Currently, I'm working in...
You're working on...
Multiple...
Right now, you're working on... Is it two different games?
Yeah, currently, I'm working on two different games at the same time. And I'm having different jobs in both. I'm using After Effects to set up my animations, but it's going to be a Flash-based game.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about working on games for an app, like a smartphone, or, you know, not necessarily the most powerful machines. What's the workflow? What's the what kind of processes are different for you?
To be quite honest, I haven't created assets that's going into a game engine for a mobile device platform yet. So far, I've just been creating 3D assets and taking images or doing image sequences of animations, and we're just rendering them out into PNGs, into image,
sequences.
Yeah, it's image sequences that we can run animations on. We just blend between the animations. That's where Flash and After Effects come in.
All right, so it sounds a lot like what it was like to build traditional video games, like back for the 64 and the NES. I mean, that's
pretty much.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Basically, we're just we're giving you the 3D look by actually doing images, but it's still a 2D based game at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a lot like Area 51 or something like that.
Area
51 was awesome.
Yeah, that was a good game, man.
I just realized we still haven't gone to pinballs.
Oh, yeah. They have Spider-Man and the Simpsons game there now.
What?
They have the X-Men multiplayer.
So if you live in the Austin area,
Pinballs Arcade.
If you don't, Pinballs Arcade.
And they serve beer there now, too.
Do they? Finally.
Yeah,
okay.
Finally.
Sorry, I totally derailed that.
Well, let's talk about, since it's the 12th episode and we're getting all crazy, it's holiday.
Hey, yeah.
It's holiday times. Let's talk about arcade games, man. What do you guys, there hasn't been hardly any new arcade games out, right? With the last big ones I can think of were, like, actual ones where you interact with the thing, you know, like the skiing games or, like, Guitar Hero or something. There's got to have some kind of peripheral device. You know, what...
Well, with Guitar Hero, I mean, we've seen the arcade version of Guitar Hero. I'm pretty sure that inside there's just an Xbox or a PlayStation, right?
Yeah, and what do you need arcades for when you have a Kinect or a PlayStation Move, you know?
But that's been true and truer every day since, you know, 1993 or whatever.
I think arcades are still needed, and it's central fact that I know we're hopping around from different areas. So
yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to go back to being a freelance artist.
Nah.
As being a freelance artist, you end up working with a lot of people. And some of the people you work with are people who've been isolated their whole lives.
Yeah. Hmm.
They have no interpersonal skills at all. And honestly, they come across as jerks. And then after a while, you start to realize that they're not jerks. They're just...
They're not trying to
so
be jerks.
So I think arcades are still needed because, you know, it gets people into a common area where you have to interact with people.
I disagree. You don't have to interact with people at an arcade. You go from one screen to the other. You don't talk to anyone along the way.
I don't know. I've made friends in arcades.
There's a different dynamic.
Well, I am cooler than you.
All right. Imagine it's like... 1995, right? And you're watching... Tekken was out in 95, right? Let's say 2000.
Okay.
2000. Someone's playing Tekken, and, you know, some people start gathering around because this one guy is, like, super awesome, and Eddie, you know, and, like, he's getting all the points or whatever.
This is like a movie in my head now.
Well, this really happened to me. That's what I'm going
through. He's over 10,000 points, man!
Yeah, exactly. And then everyone starts crowding around, and it becomes a big deal, you know? People actually care about it, and that's not something that you
really
get.
I see the dude as having, like, a sleeveless jean jacket and fingerless leather gloves and, like, a pony, like, a rat tail.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm like, Air Jordan shoes, the ones that say Air on the side with the bubbles in the heel.
Those are actually Scottie Pippen's, not Jordan's.
The Airs are Scottie Pippen's?
That say
That's
Air
why I can't
the
find
side?
Them on eBay, man.
Yeah.
I've been trying to buy them.
Are you trying to be that guy in this?
I had those.
I had those too, man.
Everybody
I love those
on
shoes.
My street, like my three closest friends, we was all in the same grade. We all had the blue and white Airs Nike shoes.
See, I had those too, but they were spelled ERR. Just kidding. That was a joke from earlier. Here, Wendell, play the bad trumpet noise for me, man.
Yeah, y'all are sharing spit. See, he did it with
horrible.
His fingers. He did it with
that
his
was
fingers.
Horrible.
Well, yeah, that one goes down. The dun dun dun. That one goes up without using your mouth. But now you
do it better with no trumpet at all.
Nice.
You made a really good point, though, man, about people. You know, especially employers caring about how you are socially, you know, so that's one of the things we're talking about, giving people advice, you know, for students and things, you know, that don't really get to hear these things. One of the things that I always get asked whenever I'm recommending someone for a job or saying like, hey, you should hire this guy. Number one thing they always ask is, is this person like a socially capable, you know, are they able to like talk to somebody or you know, bathe or whatever? You know, they're not going to stab somebody. And you know, that it really is an important thing. So for you people out there that are, you know, just sitting at home all day long, that's okay. That's how we all got to where we are, but you have to learn how to handle yourself and how to talk with people and how to work with people, because that's a big part of the job.
Especially you programmers out there. Guess what? You cannot communicate for the rest of your life through Skype. You have to actually meet people, interact with them, and talk.
But Wendell, I can order a pizza online. Okay. The toilet takes my waste away. Why do I need anything?
Wasn't it World of Warcraft that would let you order a pizza through the game?
Oh, wow. I think so. Really?
Yeah, you could like type in through the
game. That is so genius and awful at the same time.
Yeah.
The game should actually like, as you're playing, the game should actually just sort of plug IVs into you, and like, you know, when you need food, like they get you to just click on a thing and it just sends liquid intravenous food into your body.
Now, I'm sorry, how lazy is that? World of Warcraft is on your computer. You mean you really can't just switch an application and order a pizza from a website?
Alt-tab out of it.
Okay, so what year did The Matrix come out? 99?
Yeah, I think so.
It's funny because in just, what, 12 years now, we are willingly climbing into the Matrix and wishing that it was more Matrixy, you know, like,
well, back to the Kinect, man, yeah. Or any kind of like virtual reality. It really is getting better, and what, you know, where is it gonna go? Like, how
slash
far?
Getting worse.
Yeah. How far are we gonna let it, you know, let it take control?
Well,
of
I mean, just remember that there are people who get totally involved. There was a kid one time who died because he didn't eat. I don't know if he was playing StarCraft or World of Warcraft, but
I think it was StarCraft.
Have you guys seen the South Park episode of Warcraft?
Yes.
Oh man,
turn it!
The Sword of a Thousand Truths.
I think everyone in the world has seen that episode.
Now, all right, keep on talking about that. I'll be right back.
Best joke from that episode.
Wait! You've got to give us a topic.
Keep on talking about South Park.
Grape nuts are neither a grape nor a nut, something along those lines.
Talk about that South Park episode.
They're grape nuts. Well, anyway.
Sword of a Thousand Truths is neither a sword nor is it of a thousand truths. Discuss. And I'm talking to you, listeners. Talk to yourselves, because...
Wow. Talk amongst yourselves, listeners.
Yeah. Without me here, you just crash and burn, don't you, Robert?
I do it as a favor.
Now back to the joke
totally
I was trying to say.
I could have made that a million times better. But
now back to the joke I was trying to say.
Go ahead, Wendell.
Okay, Robert, you're down.
Wait. Beep. Right?
Crash and burn.
In the episode of South Park, Cartman is actually playing a game, but he doesn't want to get up to go use the bathroom.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He calls his mom to come replace his, I guess, what would you call it, a septic tank on his toilet?
It was a bedpan, wasn't it?
No, she would just hold it. It was a bedpan, and she'd just hold it. So this goes into what I wanted to talk about, and I totally forgot. South Park, the creators, are making an RPG South Park game. Full-fledged on console.
I feel like they're doing it ironically.
That's part of it. So the one of the plot lines, and I read about this in the new Game Informer magazine. Oh, so if you guys get that... The Game Informer, by the way, is, I'm pretty sure it's a free magazine.
If you go to GameStop and
well, you can sign up for a subscription for it. Yeah, so this is in the newest issue. The cover is the South Park character, so it really, you know, piques your interest. So the premise of the game is that you're a new kid in South Park, right? And you build your own character, and you're, you know, trying to meet all the new kids, but they're all having a, you know, the new game that they're playing is like wizards and stuff. So all of them are dressed up like they're playing a role-playing game.
Okay.
And it really turns into a role-playing game. And they've Obsidian is doing it. And so, I mean, they really know how to make an expansive game.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing everything to render it out to make it look like you're actually, you know, if someone were to walk in and see you playing it, they would think it was an episode of the show. So it's one of the first games that the actual creators are getting involved in. So Trey Parker and Matt Stone wrote a lot of the, you know, 90% of it. They were in the development of the game, not like the other ones.
Yeah, it only took them 12 days to develop the game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing how fast they can get it done.
Well, that was one of the things that they mentioned, that, you know, they're used to writing content that is topical, you know, for that week.
Exactly.
So it was real you know, struggle for them to try to write stuff that is long-lasting. Yeah. And they do that all the time, and they have some episodes that aren't about, mm-hmm. you know, what's going on, and they planned them out for months, but I'm really excited about it, man. Like, it looks like a really cool game, and it's amazing.
So you're going to be able to create your own, like, South Park avatar that looks like yourself?
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that Trey Parker said, he's like, man, I hate games that the character talks for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're answering and you're... He said the first thing he hates is that you're not allowed to skip. If you want to skip, he said that's the first thing he said when he walked in.
You can skip in WoW, can't you?
Well, from what I remember, it's been a long time since I played.
I never played.
Uh-oh. Well, I mean, there are some games where you can't, you know, you obviously can't skip, but...
Yeah, I hate not being able to skip.
So when does this game roughly come out?
I think they're saying sometime next year. That's why I was trying to find the magazine.
Okay, so sometime next year, Altanimation will no longer be making episodes?
No. I am going to be all about this game, man. I'm going to have the best character, all the newest cool stuff. I'm going to be all about it, man. I love all those guys. And I remember...
I'll get you an IV bag.
Well...
For Christmas.
One of the, thank you, I appreciate
Sunny
it.
Sunny D, IV bag.
One of the things that Trey Parker was saying...
I'll even get you the OJ and the purple stuff IV bags so that they can just sit there in the back.
I want one, I don't know, that I don't think you can reduce Flamin' Hot Cheetos to a liquid, but if you can, I'd like an IV of that also.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Challenge accepted.
Just put on some kind of like helmet that just sprays Flamin' Hot Cheeto dust. I can just stick out my tongue and cut it.
Oh, man.
One of the things, though, that Trey Parker said when he was talking about the game is that he loves the whole Elder Scrolls series.
Yeah.
So he wants to make it as much like Oblivion or Skyrim as possible.
Wow.
But not lose the South Park side of it, which sounds amazing.
It sounds amazing. Well, I'm actually hoping that this doesn't go over well.
Well, you're like that with everything. You're a big naysayer.
This is true, Robert. This is true.
Why don't you want it to go over well?
I don't know. I guess because...
Either you're everything that's cool, or you come up with ideas that are flamboyant in nature, and you just want to succeed.
Can we cut this part out?
We can cut this part out, yeah.
No, I'm fine.
No, why were you saying... Why didn't you want...
I don't know.
What don't you like about this?
I guess it makes me afraid that everything's going to just turn into an RPG version of itself and we all just climb into whatever world we like the best and forget about the real world.
Yeah, because I'm going to play the Dig Dug RPG game.
Dig Dug?
Have you guys ever seen that fake trailer for that game, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers MMORPG?
No. Yeah. That's a fake trailer for this?
Yeah, I must man. See it. It's great. It has a Bill Cosby cameo.
Oh, wow.
But it's all, it has a robot voice, so it's like, Chip and Dale MMORPG. And it's, you know, showing like multiple players, but it's all, you know the old Chip and Dale game for Super NES, I think it was, or Nintendo?
Never played it. Never knew they had a game.
It was such a fun game, and, you know, really 8-bit, you know, looking images, and they take those images and make it look like there's an MMO, so it's a bunch of Chip and Dale characters walking around. It's a really funny video. I highly recommend you guys watch it. Anybody seen any good animations lately? Keeping this snappy. Let's move on to something else.
Yeah, go ahead. Move on.
Arthur Christmas. I have not seen it yet, but I really want to. Pirates, though, the new Aardman movie. Have you guys seen the trailer for that?
No.
That looks good. It looks really good. In fact, there's a behind the scenes, this guy, he has a web blog called Hey You Guys.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, okay. He just does a web.
They have a picture of Sloth from the Goonies as their mascot.
No, that's what the saying's from is from the Goonies, yeah. But he has a really awesome behind the scenes video up that he just put out of this movie, Pirates, and it's all stop motion, ridiculous attention to detail, and, you know, the process that goes into making an Aardman movie nowadays. It's not really like claymation anymore. It's basically 3D. It's all done in the computer 3D.
You're going to have to show me some of these cooler ones, because some of the animations I find are like those ones that are so cryptic and weird that you don't even know what's going on.
What are you talking about?
He's talking about art.
I watched art.
What movie?
Art. I don't know what it was. I saw an animation on Vimeo, and it was just this devil with hooves that was dancing around a flower in the moonlight. I did not understand it. And the first thing I wanted to do was to take it and create a riff track for it and just talk about it.
Mm. I saw one with a devil that was... it was sort of a retelling of Jesus and Judas.
Oh, yeah.
What was it? Oh, well, there's no point in me talking about it.
I think it was called Jesus and Judas, and it was starring goats as Jesus and Judas.
Definitely parental guidance warning on that one.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about, though, Wendell. When I went to the Ottawa Animation Festival, like, half of them were... Mm-hmm. Really? You know, like, it looks like people are trying to outdo, you know, the last guy in terms of artistic film.
I don't think it's... incorrect in any way. I don't think it's wrong to say that when, you know, that the flavor that something takes on when it's done more in the commercial world is that of a story with characters that you understand, and the stuff that is allowed to come up in an environment that is publicly funded is going to be more abstract, more personal toward the artist, and less easily accessible as far as the meaning or the point or the, and a lot of times I think they'll say that there wasn't one, or, you know,
yeah.
And I'm not proing or conning either one of those two. I'm just saying that Ottawa Animation Festival wasn't a lot of it coming from Canadian film or animation dollars.
Oh yeah, and you know, all around the world actually, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of it. One of their problems that they were talking about. Americans don't participate enough because, except students, because, you know, they're out making commercial work and not making art.
What's interesting to me is, I think the French, because I see a lot of stuff from France that, you know, you look at the credits and at least part of it came from a public entity of one kind or another in France, and yet it doesn't have that, like I say, that personal sort of, this is me and I'm not using conventional methods to explain or tell a message or tell a story. They are more the classical storytelling type projects. Obviously, you know, we've talked about them many times. Team Surf. What was the name of the guy who did Triplets of Belleville?
Oh, man. I can't remember. We're terrible. Right now. Yeah.
Well, in the don't whole Goblin school. Because we don't know the answer to that question. But yes, yeah.
All the schools that they have there,
That's what intrigues me about the French is that, you know, there are a lot of places that with subsidized animation, you get one kind of thing, but with France, subsidized animation is just sort of almost the best of what the commercial world can do on their best days, you know.
Well, there's a little bit of everything. I mean, there's that are trying to be more commercial in mm-hmm. France, and there are people that are trying to be more artistic in America. But I think one of the things we have to remember when watching these is that animation is definitely a magnet for people that want to tell ridiculous stories because, you know, you can't really tell a lot of these stories in live action. I mean, with animation, the possibilities are endless, obviously. So you can have a story about a devil dancing around a flower, and it actually work how they wanted it to work, as opposed to filming a dude in a devil costume dancing around a flower. It might not, you know, have the same tone.
That would be completely awkward. They would have to have a closed set. Nobody would be able to see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it does attract a lot. And, you know, you have, well, abstract stories, you know, where... Yeah. They're trying to get out a visceral feeling or a concept,
and they might
with
just
be images.
Trying to have you react. Gutturally, is that no? That's not the right word. A gut.
That's a
primal reaction, and you're not supposed to draw anything necessarily from it. You're just supposed to react.
Yeah,
and that's their goal.
I'm not sure if I'm a dumb quote unquote dumb American, but. Some of these abstract films, they leave me... I'm not abstract. I don't have any feelings over it. It's just like... I just wasted the last 15 minutes watching
this. Oh, no. For better or worse, I'll say...
I like stuff like... what was the name of it? Pigeon Impossible?
Pigeon Impossible. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, of course.
That made sense to me. It was mm-hmm. nice, short, sweet, and it happened. What's the one with the little girl where she walks up
Alma.
To the shop?
Alma.
Yeah.
That one... I felt that was an artistic interpretation of what was going on.
Sure,
yeah.
To me, that is art. Mm-hmm. Just flying shapes on the screen or a devil walking around a flower.
Mel Brooks'
first. I'll second that. You know, sorry, you go ahead.
Mel Brooks' first movie was actually an animation, and it was about this, and he made an abstract, you know, like, student film, and the whole time he's doing a narration over it, he's like a guy doing, you know, like a trailer voice, and he's like, oh, wow, you know, like some lines going around. So, yeah, if you guys haven't seen Mel Brooks' first movie, it was an animated movie, check it out, it's really funny.
You know what would be amazing for us to do is do an animation like that, super abstract, and then go into the premiere and just, like, loudly, you know, berate it.
Yeah.
And, like, have people like, this is important, you know? Like,
bring in some of those beer hats that are on helmets. Yeah. And then with the straws.
And just totally, like, where's the action? Where's the, you know, like, and, like, just totally get, like, the ire of the crowd who's there to absorb, to preciously absorb what you have bestowed upon them, you know, like, and just tear up your own.
Hey, where's Mickey Mouse? Yeah. Where's that funny Mickey Mouse?
Oh, man, you gotta have the guy who solved the cipher, like, save the world, and, like,
where's that Pepe Le Pew?
Yeah, he's Pepe, my favorite. Yeah, Pepe Le Pew. Why not get
where's
Pepe
Where's that bunny with the big teeth?
Oh, man, yeah.
Now, and, you know, I have to agree, I am the same way. Like, I like funny, you know, very American cartoons. I think that that's the best use of the medium, but that's my personal opinion, and, you know, I don't...
I have loved stuff that broke the sort of, you know, thought outside the box, broke the barriers of classical art, medium and form, but I find that the ones that I end up saying, this is amazing, and it didn't do anything the way you normally do it, are the ones by people who have spent a career doing it the right way, and only then do you know how to sort of break the mold.
Well, and this is a good segue till the end of the show, since just so you guys
thank
know,
God.
Yeah, we've been talking for an hour. We don't have a guest this time. What I do have, though, is Q&A with Don Hertzfeldt that we'll be playing in another episode later, but he is still going on his tour, you know, with his final film right now, and there's some stuff in the Q&A that kind of lends itself to maybe spoiling something.
Did he stipulate that, or did you just want to?
I'm gonna wait. Okay. And I'm sure if I asked him, that's what he would say. But I'm not gonna to bother him because he's traveling the world right now. So I figure I'll wait a little while, and, you know, especially till after the holidays.
So you saw him at the Alamo, right?
Yes.
Alamo Draft House?
Okay. Yes. So we do have some really cool interviews lined up for you guys, but this one we just kind of wanted to celebrate our 12th episode, since it's a milestone, episode of the Alt Animation
podcast.
Yeah. So we just thought we'd kind of wing it. It's before Christmas, so we everyone's in the holiday party kind of spirit.
You've already explained all of this.
Yeah. I'm explaining it again for the people that are now just joining us. That just tuned in, yeah. So... one good thing to wrap it up is in the future we're going to be talking about surrealism in animation and the Salvador Dali, whenever he teamed up with Disney to make surrealistic animation, it just recently got, well, not very recently, but in 2003, I think, it got released. It finally got finished, this movie that the original Disney and Salvador Dali were working on together. And it is a very artsy movie, but... Mm. I enjoyed it, man. I really, like, I got what they were saying. Like, and I think that's one of the things that a lot of these abstract films, why we don't like them, because I don't think that they do what they set out to do. And I don't think a lot of them actually have, you know, real reasoning behind what they do. They just think, oh, this would be a cool image. The ones that actually have real stuff behind it, and I'm not saying it has to be blatant in your face, like, oh, this is a symbol for this. But you feel the emotion, and you're going that ride. The artist is expressing something, and if you, the audience, isn't getting that, then it's kind of a moot point. You know, it doesn't make sense. So I really think that's one you have to check it out, man. The animation on it is amazing.
I will.
Yeah,
I will.
It was really cool because Salvador Dali and Disney started.
I don't remember them promoting that at all.
And that's one of the things I was thinking about. It is. This is the stuff that Disney should be shooting out, like, in front of everybody, you know, and, like, making a big deal about it. Like, hey, we've remastered... And the guy who finished it and did everything and pieced everything together and colored everything and added 3D effects to it, he just did it on his own time. You know, like, that's something that Disney should have...
Well, then how did Disney get a hold of it?
Well, it's a Disney thing.
He works for Disney, and then, like, so he would animate for Bolt, maybe, or some movie, and then
He was in the archive area, and he kinda...
Either way, his 9-to-5 was whatever Disney wanted him to do, and then he'd go home and do this other thing.
Yeah.
I'll bet he...
And this is something that I think Disney could totally have paid him to do and, you know, finished it and released it as a short.
Sometimes that's not how it works. Sometimes you have to come and say, I'm willing to go this far with it. You know, I have put this much into it before. Because these guys, they have to go with numbers. That's their world. And,
Well, and I think the fear is...
You'd like to see the two worlds sort of happily sort of grab each other and hold on to each other and mesh. But I think sometimes it's more like two things crashing into each other. And, you sometimes get a wreck, but sometimes it works out.
Well, it's like you were saying before, you know, you kind of feel like the people making this content think that everyone's stupid, you know? And it's like they're just making content for the sheep.
And then you see someone, like, come up next to you and like, oh, yeah.
So I'm sure that there's a legitimate fear, like, no, we're not going to release a surrealist animation from Salvador Dali.
Yeah, you know, people aren't going to buy it. And you could also make an argument that, you know, surrealism as a movement is no longer... I mean, if it had been released when Dali was relevant as an artist in the art world and still doing, what do you call it, like art shows, of, you know, presenting his art, that it would be relevant in that way. But this many years on, art has moved on from what he does and has already learned his lessons and started to move in different directions. It would feel like a throwback, perhaps, but I mean...
Well, and that... Instead of talking about this anymore, we're going to have a podcast on it at the beginning of the year with a friend of mine, Simon Victor, who actually wrote his thesis in college about surrealism and animation. So he's going to be talking with us next time. And, you know, thanks again for hanging out with us, Wendell. Anything you want to finish
up
with?
On our 12th episode.
The 12th episode. Woo! Yeah. Party.
Yeah. 12 episodes.
What's your website, Wendell?
WendellJohnson.com.
And do you solicit freelance work?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, everybody, if you have some freelance work, go check out Wendell's stuff. And, you know, pay him to do stuff for you. Robert, you do anything fun for the Christmas holidays? Money.
Homeless people work for food. I work for money.
Ah, interesting.
We'll make sure that everyone...
So you're sort of like a homeless person, except that you have a home, and instead of... like begging for money for food, you beg for money.
Pretty much.
Wow, so very much like a homeless person. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Anything that you're gonna be doing for the holidays, Robert?
I haven't planned that far.
You have any appearances that people can see you at?
Appearances? I'm gonna be at the Grotto Gulch in Amsterdam on the 23rd. And the 28th, I'm going to actually be... So the 23rd, then I'm coming back to the United States. Then I'm going back on the 28th for the people who... It was a sold-out show, so we had to add another one. But yeah, going to be playing the shoot, what do you call it? Hambone. Going to be playing the Hambone. for the nice folks in Amsterdam, so...
And you can get these tickets on Bizarro, not a real event.com.
I'm pretty sure that's a real website, so...
Yeah, probably.
Somebody's going to be a Bizarro, not a real... What the heck, man? Why can't I find Amsterdam tickets? And why is it so expensive to fly to Amsterdam during the Christmas break? God!
That'd be awesome, though, if we actually created demand for this show.
That would scare me, because I'd have to learn how to play the hambone real quick.
That's the only way you can learn.
Yeah, that is
true. Can't teach you how to play the hambone, but I could teach you how to play spoons on your knee.
For real? I'm willing to learn that.
You got it.
You guys should start a podcast about spoons. Playing spoons.
We should call it spooning, and then under it, like, parentheses, no, not that.
And the cover is just you and Wendell spooning.
Yeah, that would be good.
I'm going to have to say no.
Well, all right. Thanks
and by good, I mean that I wouldn't enjoy it. I just mean that it would be a funny joke.
Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. We will be back at the beginning of the year for 2012. Starting off with Alt Animation, we got some really cool guests lined up, and some of them we have mentioned that we were going to have before, and it just hasn't gotten to the point yet where we have interviewed them, so we're still going to.
We could have totally, but, I mean, the 12th episode is special.
Yeah, that's right. The 12th episode is a very special milestone episode, and,
By the way, you know, just...
I think it turned out great.
This guy was totally like, we've got a lot of interviews that we didn't get done. What if we did them all on the 12th episode? And I was like, what if we did talking to Wendell on the 12th episode? And he was like,
right. He
just sort of paused and like looked at me and he was like, God damn it, you're right. You know? So, you're welcome, world.
Thanks a lot, man. Now we're going to have to put an explicit marker on this for the very last 2 minutes.
You do realize that you have the ability to actually block a word and cut the audio for just a second.
That takes extra work. Why don't you bleep? Why don't you just bleep yourself while you're talking to save me work?
Robert, don't do that.
Here, hold on. All right, say that again and we'll try to bleep you out right now.
I don't even remember what I said.
G.
I live in the moment. GD? You want me to
set me up
to do the GD?
Set me, no, not that one in particular, but set me up for a cuss.
Alright.
Make sure
Riddell,
I can...
why don't you start me off and then I'll...
Well, G...
you gotta tell him something bad.
Listening audience, and then stop listening at this point.
Yeah, we're just playing around now.
You want me to insult Robert?
Insult Robert... with something real, though. Don't give him something fake. Really insult his personality in some way. And then, Robert, you respond.
You guys have already done that today, so fuck the both of you. Whoops.
Oh, come on, Robert. Okay, go ahead. Insult him.
Robert, your hair is so horrible.
Oh, yeah? Well, that...
it worked out way better than I thought it would. All right.
I didn't want to really hurt Robert's feelings, so I held back.
Well, then you're not allowed on the podcast anymore. Thank you for listening.
To our 12th episode.
12th episode.
12th episode.
Listen to the 13th.
Hello, hello, and welcome. You are listening to Cell Therapy, where you get the help you need to satisfy your cartoon addiction. I'm Kevin, your host, and this is the first episode to be featured on the Alt Animation Podcast. I did 7 episodes prior to this, but I decided to cancel the podcast for various reasons. Most of which were equipment problems, scheduling, you know, trying to get other hosts and just an overall lack of support, you know, and I just, after a while, it really got to the point where I just couldn't, you know, handle all of that myself. And then once I actually decided to cancel the podcast, shortly after that, I was contacted by Josh Ryan and he said that he had a better idea. He listened to a couple of episodes and liked what he heard and say, you know, he asked me, you know, why not have a short segment featured on the Alt Animation Podcast? You know, and I gave it some thought, and I was like, man, you know what? That is really, really generous. So really, on a serious note, I really got to give a huge, huge thank you to Josh Ryan and the Alt Animation crew for letting me do this. So seriously, thank you. I really appreciate that. Now to give you a real brief summary of what Cell Therapy is. It's basically my thoughts on what the hottest cartoons are, from television to movies to web. You know, I think it's really important to stay in touch with the things that made us love animation in the first place. So not a full point-by-point review, but more like my thoughts on, you know, what the coolest parts of the cartoon are, what are the strongest parts, you know, what parts do I think that people can get the most enjoyment out of. The name Cell Therapy is a play off the word cell, which is short for celluloid. And a celluloid is a transparent sheet that animators used to draw on back in the day. Therapy, the word therapy kind of speaks for itself. It's for those of us who have to have those cartoons. I have to have my cartoons. I love them so much. It's also a song by Atlanta-based rap group Goody Mob, where it points out the struggles of life in the inner city. So that's where I came up with the name. And that's a brief history, so let's go ahead and get started. Today's therapy session is about Batman, the Brave, and the Bold. And unfortunately, it was announced that the series will be canceled after its 3rd season, which just ended in November. So I know it kind of sucks to start off with that information. You know, here I am telling you to go watch the cartoon and it's been canceled, but it does need to be mentioned for those of us who did not know. And like I said, it really, really is unfortunate that the series was canceled because I feel like there were many people who did not give this cartoon a chance. And to be honest with you, at first, I was one of them. The cartoon wasn't bad by any means. I just thought that it was geared towards the kids. That is, until I watched it. What makes it different is that it really is a throwback to some of the lighter incarnations of Batman from the comic books and the live-action Adam West Batman. So with Brave and the Bold, you get these really huge booms and pows and the bams that are accented with these trumpet sounds. Then you also have this comedic element that is present in the cartoon, which you rarely see with Batman. And most of all, it's just Batman. There is very, very little of Bruce Wayne and that whole character dynamic which made the animated series so popular. Now, I use the word lighter, and that may throw some of you off, but hang with me for a second. What I'm trying to say is that the cartoon does not try to pretend like BTAZ or Batman the Animated Series didn't exist. You still get some of that same jaw-breaking badass that you're already familiar with. And what this series does that is so different is that it puts a spotlight on how the lesser-known heroes interact with Batman. Heroes like the Blue Beetle, Plastic Man, Aquaman, which, by the way, is the best incarnation of Aquaman so far. And you get to see the relationship that these heroes have with Batman instead of Batman always being this lone soldier without any friends. And they flip that in such a way that they look at it like this. Batman has saved just about everybody's ass at some point, which makes him more like a hero among the other heroes. And I like that treatment a lot. And a little something else that they do different is before each episode, they do a little teaser short before they go into the main plot. One teaser that I watched recently was with Space Ghost. This teaser was so well done that it could have been an actual episode of Space Ghost. The animation was dead on, and they even used some of the original sound effects from the old series. So some of the heroes and villains that you would never, ever see in Batman the Animated Series because it didn't fit that show. Now they have a place here on The Brave and the Bold. That's when I realized that The Brave and the Bold has something really unique and special going on here. Another really good aspect of the cartoon is the artwork. The designs rely heavily on Bruce Timm's sort of design technique with the rounded muscles and the sharp chins and maybe a little old school detective comics thrown in there as well. Bruce Timm is one of those artists that can do more with shape and volume instead of detail and rendering. Now, he most certainly can do all of that, but what I'm saying is that these characters are designed to fit well in a cartoon, and it also makes it easy to animate. And another great thing about the artwork are the background designs and the color palette that they go with. Just, you know, really, really vibrant colors, really beautiful designs, and that really sets it apart from BTAZ, which was drawn on black paper to give it that dark and that gritty effect. So there really is a lot of cool stuff to be found in The Brave and the Bold. And I was listening to an interview of James Tucker recently, who is the producer of Batman The Brave and the Bold. And he was saying that a lot of love was put into this series, which is rare these days to have this sort of personal connection with a series. He recognizes and owns up to some of the more comedic elements of the series, and he pays respect to each incarnation of Batman that came before. He doesn't try to pretend like the other series didn't exist, or that Brave and the Bold would be the definitive Batman. It's more like this is a part of the evolution of Batman, and that this treatment is also a part of his history. So I really hope that Brave and the Bold doesn't just get washed away by the darker treatments of Batman, because it really is a great series and it does absolutely deserve a mention in the overall Batman conversation. So moving on to my final thoughts, I mean, for the younger kids, they will have a lot of fun with this, but the advantage really lies with some of the older folks. And what I mean by that is, like, this might be your daddy's Batman, or for some people, this might be your granddaddy's Batman. But what I'm saying is the advantage is because the kids will enjoy it and the older folks will enjoy it, because this really is a throwback to the Batman that they remember. So the older folks will get this range of Batman over the years that they can enjoy in several different ways, because they also watched Batman the Animated Series, which has the whole darker theme going for them. So the older folks have all of that to enjoy. Now, if you're somewhere in the middle, which means you probably grew up with Batman the Animated Series and Justice League defining what you know about this character, you're probably going to stick with the Batman that you're used to. And if you're one of those people, I urge you to give Batman the Brave and the Bold a look. Give it a look anyway, because there is a lot of content there that will add to what you already know and love about Batman. So there you go. Just a few of my thoughts on the series. I do hope you check it out. And that's going to do it for this episode. I hope you got something out of this therapy session. And please stay tuned for more episodes. If you want to keep up with Cell Therapy, you can follow the blog at celltherapy.net. That's CELtherapy.net, and comment on some of the posts. I do post just random stuff on there that, you know, don't really have anything to do with the podcast, just, you know, animation and news and stuff that I might catch from across the web. So definitely check out the blog and leave some comments. You can email me at celltherapymail, that's celltherapymail@gmail.com, and tell me what cartoons you're watching. There is a Facebook page, but I'll be honest with you, I don't really check it that often. I'm not really on Facebook that much. But the best way to keep up with the show is to follow me on Twitter. That's at celltherapy. Again, that's at celltherapy. Often tweet about a lot of random stuff. You know, mostly about cartoons, art, illustration, all of that sort of stuff, TV shows. You might find that I'm watching the same cartoon you are at the exact same time. And if I happen to go off on a tangent or a rant or something like that, please don't get offended. It's talk. It's Twitter. That's what it's for. Again, thank you for listening. And one more time, big, big thank you to Josh Ryan and the Alt Animation crew for allowing me to do this. Please stay tuned for the next episode of Cell Therapy.